you for downloading this podcast from Sound of Science. Lionel is a VW campervan, but inspired by the words and works of Carl Sagan, Lionel is the spaceship of our imagination. He likes to take people to the edge of the known universe, but before they go, we like to chat to them about music, life and science while we share a delicious pudding. This is Dessert Lionel Discs.
Lionel's passenger today is Professor Richard Davis, OBE, Professor of Astrophysics at the University of Manchester. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
So you are in Lionel, who is the spaceship of our imagination. As you know, you're about to be taken to the edge of the known universe and back, which is quite an exciting journey, I would imagine, for an astrophysicist.
It certainly would be in a vehicle like this.
Yes. Well, you're about to find out what it is like. But the work in recent years that you've been doing is on the Planck Observatory.
Indeed.
And in the last couple of months, in March, I think it was, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
March, the results of the first 15 months was released.
Indeed.
And there were some pretty headline-grabbing things.
Yes, well, the principal result is that the standard model seems to a very large extent apply. We call that the Lambda CDM model, which consists of the Lambda term, which was a thing predicted by Albert Einstein and then withdrawn. In fact, he made the statement that he thought it was the worst invention he'd ever made. This is the idea that the universe is not just expanding, but to our great surprise, is accelerating. It's actually getting faster, the expansion is. We used to think it would either slow down and stop, or maybe fall back in again,
mm-hmm.
or maybe it would just go on forever. But our surprise, surprise, it's actually accelerating. It's getting worse.
Yeah.
So that's the Lambda term. A CDM stands for cold dark matter,
right?
Because most of the material in the universe is in a form that we can't actually see.
Mm-hmm.
So we've invented this term, cold dark matter, so it doesn't produce any light. The bits and pieces that we're made of are called baryons. The protons and the neutrons represent about 5% of the universe.
Right.
There's 25% in cold dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but we're still left with 70%, and so we give that the name dark energy,
mm-hmm.
and that's the thing that's causing this acceleration.
Mm-hmm.
And so the bottom line is, we've shown there's a bit more baryonic matter, that's the stuff we're made of. Hooray!
Yeah.
There's a bit more of us than we thought
as
a result of Planck.
Yeah.
There's a bit more cold dark matter.
Okay.
And there's a bit less dark energy.
Okay.
And the age of the universe has shifted by 80 million years. And
right.
Some people on the media got worried about that. They said, well, where's this 80 million years gone?
Yeah.
Well, the answer is, it's always been there. It's just the old numbers were wrong.
Yeah.
And we've just altered that figure by about 80 million.
Okay, so it's the standard model fine-tuned, so to speak.
Yes. But that, if you look more deeply, one of the things to come out of this is the measurement of the Hubble constant, which shows the rate at which the universe is expanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that is causing quite a bit of contentious argument.
Okay.
The old number was 72 in our unit system. It's kilometres per second per megaparsec. But
right. This
number is, if you like, gives you the age of the universe and the size of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite an important number.
Mm-hmm.
We've revised that down to a figure of 67.
Right.
The old error bars on the 72 were relatively large.
Yeah.
So there really isn't a problem. Mm. It's just people are a bit surprised that it has come down. But in fact, a lot of other data has been sort of pointing at the lower Hubble constant as well.
Okay.
Now, having said, you know, broadly in agreement, when you actually start looking at it in detail, there are tensions.
Right.
And because the Planck data is so noise-free, it's a very high signal-to-noise data set, it means when you sort of combine it with anything else, you find that everything is really dominated by Planck.
Right.
And if you combine Planck with any single one other experiment, it's okay.
Right.
But if you combine all these experiments together
and
then try and combine it with Planck, then there are uncomfortable tensions start to appear.
Okay.
And probably the most exciting thing is the diffuse the distribution of the microwave background on large scales.
Mm-hmm.
It does appear that one side of the universe is more has more lumps and bumps in it on the large scale than the other side, sufficiently so that it's uncomfortable.
Okay.
And we have no idea why this is.
Yes.
And so work is going on, combining, looking at the other experiments. People are revising their other results. We have actually got much better data than we've published. We've only published about a third of the HFI, that's the high-frequency instrument, and we've published a quarter of the data from the low-frequency instrument.
Right.
Now, of course, I've seen the data from the whole lot.
Okay.
I can't tell you about that.
Okay. why is it you can't tell me about it?
Okay, well, publication is the result of all the very, very hard work.
Yeah.
And we want to be absolutely sure about the results. And we're going to spend another year before we publish the next round, and then there'll be another year probably after that to publish the final results.
Yeah.
And what we're keen on is that the people who really did all the work, they will get the recognition.
Yeah.
So we did all the work, but now we're trying to make sense of all the data.
Yeah.
And the moment all the data is published, then everybody else in the world can leap in and gain all the wonderful results of the future. And that will go on for about 20 years, I think. There won't be anything to replace Planck for the next 20 years. So we want to be very careful about what we're going to say to make sure we all agree.
Yeah.
And so we're not made fools of, if you see what I mean.
Okay. How many are you...
There are 440 scientists.
Wow.
We are essentially one-tenth of CERN. It's quite interesting. Okay. If you compare Planck to the CERN, the Large Hadron Collider that discovered the Higgs boson, we cost 700 million euros.
Okay.
CERN cost 7 billion.
Right.
It's 10 times bigger.
Yeah.
We have 440 scientists.
Yeah.
They have 4,500 scientists.
Right.
So it's actually very much that we're sort of a tenth of the scale of the Large Hadron Collider project. It's a big project.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I imagine it's very exciting to have worked on that, and you must be excited about the future as well.
Yeah, without even mentioning the further data, which I know about, with the data we've got, as I say, there are tensions, and when everybody else has sorted themselves out, the shockwaves are going around the world because of these new data. It may be that new physics is required.
Okay.
We're not quite sure at this stage.
That's
The rest of the world. There are shockwaves going on, as you can imagine, and certain people are modifying their. And some numbers are creeping back towards the Planck numbers, and it's all going on at the moment.
Really?
It's very, very exciting.
It is really exciting.
So, for instance, the neutrino is the very interesting thing. We know that neutrinos. We know there are three types of neutrino that we know of. We know of three types of neutrino.
Yeah.
We know that neutrinos must have a mass.
Yes.
Because they are produced in the sun. There's one type of neutrino produced in the sun.
Yeah.
And we measure these neutrinos here, and we find that we measure about a third the amount here that we should see.
Okay.
And what's happening is they actually are transmuting into the other two flavors.
Right.
So by the time they get here, we get all three.
Okay.
And for that to happen, they must not be travelling at the speed of light, because if the neutrino was travelling at the speed of light, as far as the neutrino was concerned, it would get here in no time at all,
mm-hmm.
because it would see time stopped.
Mm-hmm.
So there wouldn't be time for it to actually transform into the other two flavours.
Okay.
So that means it must have a finite mass.
Okay.
So we know that.
Yeah.
But our data can tell us things about the mass of the neutrino,
mm-hmm.
but further it can say, is there actually a fourth neutrino?
Right.
And that's something that's very contentious. And our data at the moment and the present publications are indicating that there are only three. And that's an interesting area. But there are other things. There's an effect called the Sunyaev-Zeldovich effect, which is to do with X-ray emission and energy changes between photons and particles. It's too difficult to try and explain, but there is a conflict there between the cosmic microwave background data and the Sunyaev-Seldovich effect data, which may require something strange about the neutrino. This is very. There's a lot of work going on. It's produced a lot of, and of course there is all this new stuff, which is going to come. We haven't published any of what we call the polarization data.
Mm-hmm.
We've just produced. We've just published the total intensity data at this stage.
Okay.
So it's a very exciting time.
Yeah. How do you get 440 scientists who are excited as they must be about that, to keep quiet?
To be honest, I am absolutely staggered that we have kept it quiet.
Yeah.
The previous mission, the WMAP mission, was a very small team of people, and they managed to keep that quiet under great difficulty.
Yeah.
And I was sure the results from Planck would have leaked.
Yeah.
But we had to sign up to a sort of, not a legal document, but a document within the consortium to promise to keep the secrecy of Planck.
Mm.
And basically, we were under threat of being expelled from the consortium. There were various people who thought the punishment should be much stronger. I won't say exactly what some people said.
Right.
It was rather, but anyway, I think that, I mean, we all benefit by keeping the secret and releasing it all together, so we speak with one voice, so we not seem to be a rabble of academics. If you put 10 academics in a room, you get 10 different views.
Yeah,
somehow we had to develop a view from these 400 scientists together. Not easy.
What could possibly have caused the anomaly of, how do you put it?
The fact that one side of the universe appears to be different to the other on the large scale.
Yeah. Is there anything that could have caused that you know of?
It's a real mystery. Right. It really is. Whether it could be something from the actual solar system itself. No, this is. It's very, very difficult to understand anything that could be producing some anomaly like that.
Okay.
It's really got us scratching our heads.
Yeah.
A lot of people are working on various ideas, but to no avail at the moment.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. You see, the thing is that by and large, I mean, I think the head of the European Space Agency says that we have a perfect universe model.
Right.
The Lambda CDM nearly is perfect.
Mm.
It is astonishing how well it fits.
Mm.
But then when you look carefully, there are things that don't quite
fit
in detail.
Yeah.
And we're not surprised, because measurements were pretty good before Planck.
Yeah.
But Planck is I'm not surprised that there are these small differences, because Planck's errors are so much smaller than anything else.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit of a cruel thing to say, but to a large extent, you could throw away all the other experiments that have ever been done, and it really wouldn't affect the Planck results, because Planck is so good, and it was designed to be so good. It was designed to be you can't do any better. We could not launch another spacecraft and do better.
Okay.
With the total intensity.
Okay.
It doesn't give you the state of the art in polarization.
Yeah.
We could do better
in
polarization. It was never designed to be. It was designed to give results limited by natural causes, not by noise, not by anything technological on the spacecraft. You could not launch a spacecraft to give you better results in total intensity, just in temperature. But you can do better in the polarization.
I mean, it's just brilliant. It's brilliant that it happened. You know, it's out there still collecting data. How long is it going to collect data for?
The HFI, the high frequency camera, was turned off in February this year.
Okay.
The low frequency instrument, because it used up all its helium.
Right.
It was designed initially to run for 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
We could take more helium on board, helium-3, and we did take as much as we could possibly afford.
Mm.
We managed to run it for 2.5 years.
Wow.
Which was way beyond the the nominal mission was just for 1 year.
Yep.
And so the nominal mission was for the low frequency instrument as well.
Sure.
We've actually run the low frequency instrument now for nearly 4 years.
Wow.
The low frequency instrument doesn't rely on materials that are wasted, it's all recycled.
Mm.
So in principle it could go on.
Okay.
Although they assumed that the coolers would run out of steam, they would fail, but they haven't done.
No.
And Izzy's actually still running.
Yeah.
So it looks like we're probably in the situation that we will turn our back on Planck when it's actually still working.
Oh, wow, really?
Which saddens me greatly.
Yeah, I bet
having,
it does.
Having worked for 18 years
wow.
on this project.
Wow.
And we're not going to get another one for 20 years.
No.
Or certainly we're not going to get... We're not going to be in the situation of having data coming down from the new satellite. I think that may be pessimistic, but I don't think it is. These projects always take longer to do than you would imagine.
Yeah. Well, you're in the spaceship of our imagination, so you're going to the edge of the known universe. You may as well stop off at the Planck Observatory on the way. Have a look at what your work. Check it's still running, and maybe if you'd brought some helium-3 with you,
we could get HFI going
again. Sadly, you didn't. I presume that's not your luxury item that you've brought with you. But we'll come to that. You've worked on it for 18 years.
Yes.
How does launch day feel after 18 years?
Yes. I was pretty excited.
Yeah.
And I gave a podcast shortly afterwards, and I've listened to it since, and I was actually fairly breathless.
Right.
Because I think my heart was beating quite fast.
Yeah.
The launch was really quite dramatic. The amusing thing was the students were we had a big party here in Manchester.
Okay.
And I hosted the party.
Yeah.
And I had all the times when various things were going to go on, when the launch would happen, when the solid boosters would be ejected, when the nose cone would be ejected, all the various things, when the next stage of the rocket would be ignited,
mm-hmm.
and I had all those timings, and I had my wristwatch, and I was saying, we're going for ejection of the solid fuel rockets, 3, 2, 1 now, and the solid fuel rockets would fall off. And I was talking all the way through, and apparently the students thought I was actually controlling it. But all I was doing was I had the schedule of events timed to the second. I was told afterwards they thought I was actually controlling, I was rather amused by. So that was a great moment. But we hadn't switched on the cameras, the two cameras, the HFI and the LFI.
Mm.
And the LFI was due to be switched on when the spacecraft was on its way to L2. You appreciate the spacecraft lives a million miles from the Earth. It lives four times further away than the Moon.
Mm.
That was an interesting feeling when you picked up the hardware and realised this was going to go four times further away than Neil Armstrong went.
Amazing.
And then after about a month, when all the outgassing, all the materials had gone and Planck was well on its way, we switched LFI and the low frequency instrument.
Yeah.
And that was the moment.
Yeah.
That was more scary to me than the launch, because that was when you found out whether Richard Davis's hardware all failed and everybody else's was working.
Yeah, sure.
I used to have nightmares about it. We built these 20 units and I thought we'd probably lose about 10%.
Yeah.
Other people building equipment like this, the track record was 10%.
Okay.
And in my worst nightmares, I would wake up and we'd lost a lot.
Yeah, I imagine.
And the reality is, we lost nothing.
It's
all working. Every single transistor
on the
machine is functioned.
It's pretty. Well, it's unheard of, really. That sort of success.
The NASA machine also did have that. Had that same result. The WMAP instrument also had 100% success.
Wow.
So it's a bit frightening when that's your competition.
The
American instrument, everything worked.
Yeah.
But the European instrument, everything worked.
Yeah.
And still is.
Fantastic. Maybe we're getting better at these things.
I think it could be this thing called space qualification. At the time, it's incredibly annoying. The sorts of things that at one point, for instance, we were stopped building because it turned out that some capacitors had not been space qualified.
Mm.
Now I've never known a capacitor fail in my time building hardware. These little capacitors, these space rated but not space qualified, so they insisted on checking and doing tests on 500 of these capacitors, and in this time they actually stopped us building, and that meant we could possibly hold up the launch.
Okay.
And the result of this, and all my people went on holiday, it was during the summer, and I was left sorting all this out. And ESA went away and they had all these 500 capacitors checked and every single one of them passed the test. There was nothing. They were all okay.
Yeah.
But that made me angry at the time.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, maybe the space qualification is the reason.
Yeah.
I won't go into all the tests. It's really very frustrating. Fortunately, I did have a project manager who handled most of that side of things for me.
Okay. I just think it's amazing. I was watching a documentary a while ago about the Voyager things, and you know, just to work for so long on something, and
it's still going.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But well done. I'm really pleased that you've all done it. I think it's just a brilliant thing.
Well, of course, the reality is I was the leader, happened to be. I did go out and win the grant from the funding agency, from the British government.
Yeah.
But I had it's the team of people I had around me.
Sure.
I was the figurehead. Received the honours, which was very nice.
Yeah, but so you got an OBE for that work.
Well, it said it was for services for science, but that was in principle the reason.
Yeah, that must have been... You know.
That was a wonderful day, yes. Yeah. It was the Queen herself.
Oh, wow.
And what a wonderful lady, yes.
Great.
Yeah. She had to, I think she did 85 of us, including KBEs, that's knighting with the sword, in just over the hour. And she had something to say to each of us, which was quite remarkable.
Yeah.
And she didn't have any bits of paper or any script or anything.
Clearly,
Her Majesty enjoys the honour ceremony. And so we all did. It was marvellous. It was wonderful.
I was watching the press conference for the Planck results, and something was said which I found quite intriguing, which was that if I was a fan of the inflationary theory, then I would be very pleased with the Planck data. On certain websites afterwards, there was a suggestion that the Planck data was saying that the inflationary theory wasn't correct. What's all that about?
Oh, this is these fine details I'm talking about.
Okay.
I mean, to a large extent, the Lambda CDM model, including inflation, does fit. But as I say, there are tensions.
Okay.
That's what they're referring to.
Okay.
Yeah. Although we are looking back to the universe when we call it the surface of last scattering. That's when the cosmic microwave background photons set off. So that was 380,000 years after the Big Bang, which is relatively close to the Big Bang.
Yeah.
The inflation happened very close to the Big Bang, at 10 to the minus 35 of a second. So for those of you who aren't scientific, that means a decimal point followed by 35 zeros and a one of a second.
Yeah.
It's a very short period of time, and that's when the inflation happened. But the way the cosmic microwave background is smooth, we see fluctuations, but these fluctuations are very tiny. They're only one part in 100,000.
Right.
So the microwave background is actually 2.7 degrees now. But the fluctuations we see are about 30 microkelvin.
Okay.
That's 10, that's 100,000 times less.
Yeah.
And that's the great difficulty to explain. Why is it so smooth?
Yeah.
Why are the fluctuations not much bigger than that?
Yeah, sure.
And the only way we can explain that is through the inflation idea, where the way I try and explain it is when the universe was born, it was like you take a balloon and seal it up and put it into liquid nitrogen. And what happens is it shrinks down and shrivels down, and it tries to get all the surface bits in contact. It tries to shrivel down to zero surface area.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you bring it out and warm it up, it goes pop, and the nitrogen inside boils, and it goes back to being a sphere. And it's that sort of thing which we think is going on in inflation. The universe was born with all its surfaces all crunched up, all sort of tucked up inside itself, different dimensions, and then this inflation thing happened. There was some sort of phase transition.
Mm.
We don't know what it was that changed phase. It certainly wasn't boiling nitrogen. And the universe expanded catastrophically.
Yeah.
But the result of this expansion was it smoothed it all out.
Right.
And that's the process that we need to explain why the fluctuations are
as
small as they are.
Okay.
So although we observe the universe only 380,000 years after the Big Bang, we can say something about what it was like at 10 to the minus 35 of a second after the Big Bang.
Incredible. You are in the spaceship of our imagination. You are going to the edge of the known universe and back. But you're going to need some music along the way. Have you brought some music with you?
Yes.
Perhaps we could take your first choice.
Yes, the first choice is I've chosen a piece of Bach. I suppose it goes with my mathematical training. Bach's music is highly mathematical. Music and maths are very close to each other, and I've chosen the Passacaglia and Fugue in C minor. The Passacaglia is a repetitive entry that goes on with one simple tune that comes in as a round and re-enters again and again and again, and entwined in the most beautiful way that only Bach was able to do. And then it's followed by the standard fugue, and it's always been a new piece of music of great beauty to me, and I can listen to it and never get bored.
Little version growing up in, where did you grow up?
In a town called March, spelt the same as the month, in North Cambridgeshire.
Okay.
Small town.
And is it the case that you were in March looking up at the stars and wondering what it was all about? How did this happen to you? How did you get here?
Well, I think many, many people, not just scientists, look at the sky and wonder what it's all about. Mm. I had no idea I was going to become an astronomer.
Okay.
In fact, I was equally interested in music and the classics, Latin and Greek, and science.
Okay.
Biology went by the board. I became more interested in mathematics. So after I did my O levels, I realised that I could still play music, and I still do. I could still read my Latin and Greek, but if I didn't do my maths, I would never be able to do it. So I decided to study science professionally.
Yeah.
So that was the direction I went in, physics and chemistry.
Right.
But I didn't know at that stage that I was going to do astronomy research. That was very much not on the cards.
And what brought you towards astronomy? When did that happen? How did that happen?
Well, I was in my third year finishing at Cambridge, and I knew I wanted to do research. By that time, I had specialised in physics, and in fact, I did a degree in theoretical physics, which is interesting, given that I've built the technological part of
Absolutely.
This. Yes, I moved on to the technology side.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to do research in physics, and so in those days, one looked at the very small and the very big, and the middle bit, the nanoscience, that didn't exist really at that stage, although Cavendish did have a research group that was trying to study the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
My friend was very interested in particle physics, and it was very, very difficult to get into particle physics, whereas there were possibilities of getting into astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
There were several groups doing it. In Cambridge was one.
Mm-hmm.
In my college, the director of studies, Sir Francis Graham Smith, had just left my college, Downing College, to go to Jodrell Bank.
Right.
And so I was, and another friend said, Jodrell Bank looks like an interesting place for you. And
sure.
Anyway, I went for interview,
yeah.
And I met met the wonderful Sir Bernard Lovell.
Oh, wow.
And developed a very close relationship with Sir Bernard. And we were friends right till his demise. Indeed, I was going to see him on the Tuesday, and I was telephoned up the Monday night to say he'd just died. That's basically how I got roped into working on astronomy. And
wow,
I've been there for 41 years, and I can honestly say I've never been bored for one second.
No.
It's intrigued me the whole time.
Fantastic, yeah. I imagine it's the envy of a lot of scientists to be able to...
The moment I say that I work at Jodrell Bank and astrophysics, a lot of people say, oh, how wonderful that must be. Right, and it is. Yeah, it really is. It's a great honour. And I sometimes think, wow, I'm a professor of astrophysics. Where did that come from?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's brilliant. You say you still play music?
Yes, I still play my piano. Okay. I have managed to bring my bassoon down. I play the bassoon. I've brought it down from the loft. I keep looking at it. I have got it out and played a few notes on it.
Okay.
And I've also got my guitar, which I don't play.
Okay.
I thought about it, but I still listen to a lot of music.
Okay.
And of lots of varying types, as you'll find out.
Okay. Well, perhaps we'll move on to your second choice at this point.
Well, it's got to be the Beatles, hasn't it?
Okay.
And Let It Be.
Yeah.
And having had the Bach, well, actually, I can play, well, not very well, but I can play Let It Be on the piano. And it's very interesting because the whole sequence of chords is a classical piece of Bach. I'm not trying to say the Beatles just copied Bach.
Yeah.
They didn't. It's a wonderful... the combination of Lennon and McCartney together... when they wrote music together is just fantastic.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Whisper words of wisdom, let it be.
I did actually have a chance meeting with Paul McCartney.
Oh, wow.
And I was hitchhiking before I went to university.
Yeah.
And he stopped and picked me up.
Really?
Got in the car. I was absolutely flabbergasted. I couldn't believe it was who it was instantly. My girlfriend at the time was laying eggs in the back of the car. I asked him what his name was. He said, Paul. I said, Paul who? He said, Paul McCartney. I said, oh, my God. terribly, very nice chap. I mean, it was at the period when I guess he and Lennon were probably the most famous two guys in the world.
Yeah. Really.
And he was exactly the same as he came over on the films that they made.
Wow.
Really, really super guy. Driving up to, he was driving, going to go up the M6 to Liverpool.
Yeah.
And he said, this is the thing which my girlfriend, she just can't believe it. He actually said, well, why don't you come up and stay with us? And he said, George, can't make it tomorrow. You could play. And I thought, this is just too much. I said, no, this would have been to this house, which of course is preserved now.
Yeah. Okay. So you did play the guitar then?
Not very well. I still don't play it very well.
Right.
Not because the idea of playing with the Beatles, this was just somewhat crazy.
Yeah.
And when the night is cloudy, there is still a light that shines on me. Shine until tomorrow, let it be.
as I say, you get Carl Sagan's Cosmos. Have you read that?
Mm-hmm. No.
No, you've not.
But you? As I say, I have listened to the Pale Blue Dot, which is when he got them to turn round the Voyager spacecraft and view the Earth from out at the orbit of beyond Saturn.
Yeah.
And he delivered this talk to the Senate, in which he said everything, basically it was a summary, as everything that's ever happened, every evil person, every kind act, everything you could possibly conceive of happened on this blue dot.
Mm.
And the Senate, there were tears in the Senate. Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, it brings tears to my eyes whenever I listen to it.
It's wonderful stuff. Well, I hope you enjoy the book while you're travelling through the universe. You could probably update some of it, actually, with the Planck data, if you would, while you're here. You've got a pen, if you could do that. But have you brought another book with you as well?
I've brought the complete works of William Shakespeare.
Fantastic.
I don't understand very much. When we did Shakespeare at school, I didn't really understand very much of it. It wasn't until I went along and saw one of the plays acted outside, as they would have, that's how they would have been, that it all made sense.
Okay.
It all came together. And the plays were written so there was something in there for everybody.
Mm.
The village idiot would have enjoyed a Shakespearean play, and the most academic person would enjoy a Shakespearean play. But when you're just reading it for Cole as a schoolboy, it didn't make much sense to me. But now I've actually seen many of the plays for real.
Yeah.
I think that will keep me busy for quite a long time.
I dare say.
Trying to read that.
I dare say. And you also get the complete works of Sir David Attenborough to remind you of home while you're out there, which you can watch on this screen behind me here.
Wonderful.
And have you brought a film with you?
Yes, I've selected. It's a very sad film. It had a deep impact on me, The Schindler's List and the music. That was used in that piece of in that film, which has haunted me forever. And I remember watching it, and I won't use the swear word. I said, I'm just referring to Mr. Hitler, saying, "You, so and so, you actually did that terrible, terrible thing, insult to humanity." Mm. And it's just, I think it'll make me realise my situation. Suck out there on the edge of the universe. Yeah. It's not that bad, given what happened to these poor people.
Yeah, absolutely. And you wish that Carl Sagan had discovered time travel and managed to go back and explain to Hitler exactly the situation that he was in and that we're all in on this pale blue dot of ours.
Yeah.
We should probably move on with some more music. We need to get you out there into space.
Zadok the Priest by Handel is my choice. It always amuses me, this piece of music. It's such a wonderful entry. It goes and builds up and builds up and builds up. And it's going to get there, and he's going to come in, and then it dies down again, and then it builds. And you think, oh, he's gone down the pub, Zadok has. So whenever I'm listening to it, I say, he's not coming, he's not coming. And of course, when he does come, and he says, "Hey, Doc," this entry is absolutely incredible. And it's a very, very beautiful piece of music, and I love it very much. I used to go to the Halle Orchestra, I must admit. I haven't been for a while, but I think I will be tempted to go back on August the 31st, which so happens is the birthday of Sir Bernard. And so this August the 31st, he would have been 100, and he's had a very deep effect on my life, in fact, given me my professional career.
Yeah.
And the Halle Orchestra are going to perform at Jodrell Bank on that day. I think that's a definite must. I often put it on first thing in the morning. It's a waking up piece of music.
Yeah.
My girlfriend is going around bleary eyed. She said, "Will you turn that loud thing off?" And of course, I use it to wake up. It's a tremendous piece. Possible in Lionel here, but I've brought some seeds. I'm a very keen vegetable grower.
Okay.
I go out and inspect my vegetables at this time of the year. Every morning I was out this morning shouting at them or talking to them.
Okay.
Whether I'd be able to grow anything in Lionel, I don't know, but if I could grow something, it would give me great pleasure.
Okay, well, we're next to a park. We'll collect some soil. You will pass quite a few sons along your way, so it should work. Be a good experiment, wouldn't it? There's a sink as well. You've got water, it should be okay. That's a good choice. We really should be getting out there. It's bizarrely getting hot in here, which is not something I've experienced before. But summer has actually come now, which is quite remarkable.
Either that or we're getting near the beginning of the universe.
It could be that.
The surface of last scattering is 3,000 degrees.
Really?
Yeah, it's the same temperature as Betelgeuse.
Really?
So when we get there, it'll melt Lionel, so we better not get too far to it.
Yes.
Unless Lionel's got special heat shields.
Well, he is the spaceship of our imagination,
okay.
So we can do whatever we want,
okay.
Really.
Right.
It's fine. Mm. But we will be careful. Lionel, be careful. So we've got two more CDs to take with you. What's your next one?
Imagine. Okay. That's John Lennon. It's half of the Beatles.
Okay.
It was used in the Olympics.
Yeah, of course.
All the different races, everybody getting on, no borders, no wars. Mm. It's an amazing vision he had. Mm. It's a very, very beautiful piece of music.
Fortunately, we do have a blowtorch in Lionel, so you can prepare that. We'll have that now. Well, it's time for you to go to the edge of the known universe and back. Thank you so much for coming along. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you, a real honour to talk to you, I must say. Absolutely fascinating work that you've done, that you're continuing to do, and I look forward to the results of Planck coming through in the years to come. You've got one more piece of music to come. It is the music that you will take off to.
The Ode to Joy in Beethoven's Ninth.
Fantastic.
That is a very, very joyful piece of music. The way that the orchestra plays and It was one of the first times that suddenly many people thought Beethoven had gone mad. Suddenly a man stands up and says, "Why are you making all this noise?" in German. Yeah. Oh, Freund, da 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 da. To be even worse, then a whole choir stands up yeah. and starts singing this tremendously exciting song to the words which are the Ode to Joy. It was one of the... It was the last symphony. It was the last movement of the last symphony that he wrote. He was, of course, completely deaf.
Sure.
And many people say, "Oh, it's the ravings of a deaf man." But it is, but it's a beautiful piece of music that okay. I'd be very happy to take off to that.
Fantastic. Well, you're about to. I'll put it on, and I'll leave you to it. Thank you so much again. Enjoy your journey, and I'll see you when you get back.